Fun stuff. Okay, so last week, this better be good. Again, no pressure. I'm talking to myself here. So this is part 7 of Mosaic, which I thought I was being so clever about. Such a clever title. Because Mosaic sounds like Moses, but it doesn't have anything to do with Moses. Totally separate etymology on the root of Mosaic. Different language stream. Just means putting together. It's a work of art where you put, it's you assemble a variety of different kinds of pieces and colors to make a work of art. Moses, simply the name, but it's kind of cool because it's like putting together this puzzle of someone's life, putting together this work of art, looking at all the different ingredients, or at least as many as we can in 7 weeks, of the life and personality of one of the greatest characters, not just of the Bible, I mean just world history. Moses, the greatest prophet Israel ever knew. And made it to 120. 120 years old when he died, yet his eyes were not weak nor his strength gone. He was still sharp and tough. Since then, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. No one has ever done the amazing deeds that he did. From the parting the Red Sea to all the plagues to all the... So many amazing miracles that God did through Moses. So many conversations, so many talking God out of things. It's like, how does, this friendship between Moses and God was so interesting and is such an example for us, sets the pace for us to be able to realize we have weight with the God, Almighty God of the universe. We have some pull. He actually takes our prayers seriously. And he wants us to get involved and try to to plead our case. And he takes that seriously. He definitely did with Moses. I love the line about how Moses, how he just, talked face to face with God. You really believe, how did God reveal himself? I've been showing the Bruce Almighty, last week, somebody came up and said, hey, maybe you're not up to date in the news so much on that. Well, anyway, so I switched that around a little bit just to get a fresh face of God up on the screen. Do you remember the old God movies? They were absolutely brilliant. And even John Denver can act. He does a great job in the first one, but there's 3 of them. And they're great family movies, get into great conversations. George Burns plays the dual role in the 3rd movie, O God, You Devil. He plays God and then the devil, and they look exactly alike. And remember, he goes, wait, I just saw the devil, and it looks just like you. Oh, yeah, he's always trying to be like me. It's just great, great lines, great delivery, but great theology and just, conversation starters. Great. That's 70s, right? That's not even 80s, going back to the Oh God movies. And just what God says about, with him, I speak face to face, clearly not in riddles. He sees the form of the Lord. Who was this guy? I got to put up my... I'm a big deal meme on this one. So, this is, Moses could have had a huge ego. Did he? How would you let that, go to your head if you were given the privilege that Moses was given? You guys are pretty focused, and I'm like, wow. I honestly thought by part 7 and today and what's coming up in a few minutes, you guys would just be like, tapping your feet. Seriously, Rick, you know, make it quick. You know, I get the Moses thing, but there's a big game at 5 o'clock and I'm kind of going nuts here, you know? And so all I can really think about, you know, is basketball, you know, and Cavs and Warriors and all that. And I don't blame you. And so, I know. Okay, but hey, just as soon as we're done here, we'll live stream it, if you know, and get the game on. It's all for you. It has nothing to do with me or anything. Okay, but I get how you feel, and I'm right there with you. And I was, okay, but something really interesting happened to me. And I'm like, whoa, that actually ties into the talk today. Well, I was catching Denise up on all the drama from game one. You know, okay, there's this guy, J.R. Smith. I hate his guts. I hate him so bad. I never liked him. You know, I don't like him. He's just a thug player. The beginning of the game, in game... what's that? You can if they're on opposing teams. Yeah, I know. And so I was so happy when I found that. You know, and so... Okay, and so I was booing every time. Okay, I mean, the game starts off and... You know, and so JR takes out Klay from under his feet, and he's got, look, I mean, Klay Thompson is the nicest guy, such a good guy, and he would cheap, dirty play, you know, typical JR Smith. And so Klay's out, you don't know if he's going to come back. Every time now that JR Smith gets the ball, you know, the whole place is booing, you know, I'm booing from my family room. And then at the end of the game, I mean, it's just, and everybody's cheering on J.R. Smith for the way he hands the game back to the Warriors, who had basically, we're going to let this one slip through their fingers. And it's so funny, because if you don't like the Cavs, and so, you know, so what happened was, if you didn't catch the game, I know all of you guys saw it and been reading about it, well, no, I don't know, but if you didn't, you know, the Cavs were really in a position to win the game in the last few seconds, and all JR had to do was tip the ball in from a rebound that he got that Kevin Durant couldn't get somehow. But then he what happens? He dribbles the ball out to the perimeter, like thinking that they were winning the game. He just had to dribble out the clock, but it was a tie game, sends it into overtime, which you're not going to beat the Warriors in overtime at Oracle. And so... everybody, you know, poor J.R. Smith is just poor J.R. Smith, who cares? I'm part of it. It's like, you know, the laughing stock of, you know, of the NBA. Look on LeBron's, go that way, pass it that, you know, don't come out this way. We got to try to win the game. And so his head's hung low at his press conference. Okay, but this morning, you know, and he's like, oh, I knew we were tied. What I was trying to do, and he's like, making up all these excuses. Like, come on, JR, don't, you know. And I got caught up in the whole, oh, I'm so glad he's here, because I've never just, you know, and this whole prejudice, like, I don't know the guy. It's just like, you know, it's just how you get into things as a sports fan. I have come around, and I am so impressed with J.R. Smith, and I just want to publicly say that a boy, because he, you know, he just admitted, he's all, you know what, I messed up, and you just love it, I love it, when a guy, you know, with that kind of, you know, exposure and talent, I mean, he's a 15-year veteran, he's an amazing athlete and competitor, and champion. He's one of the few guys that was on the Cavaliers that beat the Warriors a couple years ago, you know, and a valuable player. But this was the article on ESPN this morning that made me come around and go, wow, okay, I got to reevaluate, you know. It's a good guy. J.R. Smith admitted Saturday he was not aware of the score at the end of regulation in the loss in the finals, but he said he won't let the mistake affect his play in game two. And I just love that. When a guy, he just admits, you know, I messed up, but I'm going to keep doing my job. I'm going to hang in there. I'm not going to let this lose my focus. All right, you know, go ahead and laugh at me. What do you say? After thinking about it a lot after the last 24 hours or however long it's been, I can't say I was sure of anything at that point. And so instead of trying to, like, make up different scenarios and talk his way out of it, he's like, you know what? I just messed up, you know. And then he goes on to say, and this just really just really touched me, the way he described himself and his personality. That's pretty much who I've been my whole life. I've always been the one guy who is the butt of the jokes, so the one guy who does something crazy and everybody's got to look at, or whatever the case may be. So I've just got to come back, be myself, and play the next day. I can't really dwell on things too much. I've been like that my whole life, and that's what it looks like it's going to continue to be. So I've just got to go out there and be me. And, you know, it's like, that's all you had to say. But now I'm kind of mad the other way. It's like, okay, this guy won me over. Now I really like him, you know? And that's usually the way it works when you get to know somebody, right? And you kind of hear more about who they are and all that. I can't believe I like J.R. Smith. God transformed my heart towards that guy. And so I'm just so impressed with how he, you know, was just honest, took the heat. All his teammates are rallying around him. It's going to be a scary game tonight. We'll see. The reason I tell you the story is because it's just a heartbreaker story. This leader, this veteran leader of hundreds of thousands of people. It's not a rookie move. I mean, we can cut him some slack. You know, he's a young elite, you know, rich kid growing up in the palace when he, you know, loses his temper in that first story we saw when he kills an Egyptian slave driver. But this blunder in the desert, Moses has his own story that really brings some real consequences into his future. How does it affect him? Okay, so here's part one. We see the first little part of the story in Exodus chapter 17, where the Israelites have been wandering in the desert, and everybody's just complaining. Things are not going well. The whole Israelite community set out from the desert of sin, which just happened to be the name, traveling from place to place as the Lord commanded. They camped at Rephidim, but there was no water for the people to drink. They quarreled with Moses and said, "Give us water to drink." Moses said, "Why are you quarreling with me? Why do you put the Lord to the test? Haven't you seen all the miraculous things that he's been doing to get us here? He's not going to just let you die out here." But the people were thirsty for water there, and they grumbled against Moses. They said, "Why did you bring us out of Egypt to make us and our children and our livestock die of thirst?" The Lord answered Moses, "Go out in front of the people. Take with you some of the elders of Israel and take in your hand the staff which you struck the Nile." That same staff. Remember that awesome staff? "And go. I will stand there before you by the rock at Horeb. Strike the rock and water will come out of it for the people to drink." So Moses did this in the sight of the elders of Israel, and he called the place Massah and Meribah, because the Israelites quarreled and because they tested the Lord, saying, "Is the Lord among us or not?" And everybody drank from this miraculous water that poured out of a rock. Years later, a lot of adventures happen. Now we look to the book of Numbers. Remember last Sunday how we talked about just the boring titles in the Bible? How, you know, Numbers is an exciting book. I mean, it should be retitled "The Adventures of 2 Million People in the Middle of Nowhere." I mean, it is crazy what goes on in the book of Numbers. And again, the lazy monks not being very creative when they're trying to just, you know, throw out a title in the Middle Ages. The original stories didn't have titles. Anyway, they need to be retitled. Okay, but here's what's going on. Now the whole Israel community arrived at Kadesh. There, Miriam, this is Moses' sister, died and was buried. I mean, this is many years later. Now there was no water again for the community, and the people gathered again in opposition to Moses and Aaron. They quarreled with Moses and said, "If only we had died when our brothers fell dead before the Lord. Why did you bring the Lord's community into this wilderness that we and our livestock should die here? You're doing it all over again." And Moses is like, I mean, how frustrating would that be? It's like, guys, we've seen God come through time and time again. I used to be so judgmental towards the Israelites in the wilderness. And just as the years added into my life. I remember in my teen years and in my 20s, those stupid, stubborn Israelites. Devin, they seen enough of God, and I still do the same thing. I'm right there. It's like I've got to be reminded by somebody how many times God has come through for me. But I'll go, God, where are you? What are you doing? This is so confusing. If only. Why did you bring us out of Egypt to this terrible place? No grains, no figs, grapevines, or even pomegranate. We love those pomegranates back in Egypt. And there's no water to drink. Moses and Aaron went from the assembly to the entrance to the tent of meeting and fell face down. This is where Moses would meet personally with God. And the glory of the Lord appeared to them. The Lord said to Moses, take the staff. And you and your brother Aaron gather the assembly together. This time, speak to that rock before their eyes, and it will pour out its water. You will bring water out of the rock for the community so they and their livestock can drink. So Moses took the staff from the Lord's presence, just as he commanded him. He and Aaron gathered the assembly together in front of the rock, and Moses said to them, listen, you rebels, must we bring you water out of this rock? Then Moses raised his arm and struck the rock twice with his staff. Water gushed out, and the community and their livestock drank. Moses lets things go to his head a little bit here. What did God say? Speak to the rock. Just say, hey, rock, how about some water? Instead, Moses says, kind of talks down. Everybody says, hey, listen, you rebels, do I got to do this again? Do me and my brother Aaron have to, show off again? I got this killer staff. Last time, just hit it once. I'm going to smack it twice this time. Now, what do you do with your star player? You see this in the NBA. You see it in pro sports. You see this even in classroom. You see this everywhere. The star player, the top kid, maybe the highest grosser in your, who's driving in your company, where in the workplace, who's the most, who's the highest producing employee. They get away with stuff, don't they? They somehow, cut corners or whatever. They get cut some slack, if the star player doesn't shows up late for a meeting, things don't come down on them like maybe the rookie or the newbie, or whoever's at the bottom of the totem pole. Usually they're the ones that are made an example of, because you gotta stroke those egos. You gotta be, you wanna keep a good thing in place. You gotta make sure you manage everybody a little bit differently. At least in human terms. It would be very easy to see God treat Moses. He's like the one guy I really reveal all of who I am. I'll let this slide. Come on. Can you blame the guy with all that pressure, with everything that's going on? He's gonna lose it every once in a while. What would you have God do here? I hate what happens next, because I would much rather see just a little talking to. It's like, hey, let's not let this happen again. But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, because you did not trust me enough to honor me as holy in the sight of the Israelites, you will not bring this community into the land I give them. After all God and Moses had been through, the whole goal, the whole end game, to bring the Israelite nation into a land that God promised 400 years ago to their ancestors, to Abraham. He's going to finally come through. He's prepared this land flowing with milk and honey for his people. And Moses has put up with so much and worked so hard. And now God's saying, I can't have anyone on my team, even my star player,
even my captain, act like that. There's a consequence to that.
It's interesting. Moses disobeyed a clear and direct instruction from God. He took credit for the miracle himself. And kind of the way he phrased it, you know, must we save you guys again? Instead of attributing it to God. And he did this in front of everybody. It wasn't something he just did on his own. This is in front of the whole locker room, so to speak. In front of the whole team. In public. Went against, you know, policy. Well, what do we learn about God in this story? And this is the one thing that jumps out. I want to talk about Moses, but I want to talk about something we learn about God. And what stands out here is God cares much more about our character and the person who we are and that we're becoming than the things that we accomplish. And I don't know if you've heard this phrase. It's a little bit old school. Comes out more of a King James translation, but I remember growing up with it and really... And when I heard, I never understood what it meant for a long time. It shows up in a couple places. One of them is the Apostle Peter, when he sees that God is including Gentiles, not just Jews, in his plan of the gospel. And he goes, in truth, now I understand that God is no respecter of persons. No respecter of persons. What does that mean? It basically means God doesn't show favorites. And you can be the star, and until he's shaped and crafted you into the image of his son, he's never going to just let things slide. He has such high aspirations for us. But what's really neat about what this shows about God, and I love this quote from this article, it talks about this phrase, no respecter of persons. What this means is that God will work with each person who comes to him with the same amount of intensity and to the same degree that he will work with anyone else. In other words, there will be equal treatment for everyone. You could be third string D-League. And mixing metaphors here. But you could be, you know, sitting at the far end of the bench. And he's going to spend as much time with you coaching you up. And making sure you're prepared for game time as he does with any of his stars or starters. Because everybody in his mind is a star. Everybody's a starter. Everybody has to be prepared. He cares, and I love this phrase, work with each person with the same amount of intensity and to the same degree. And so, you know, there's a little story about one of the Israelites in this whole Exodus story that sins, and until, you know, it's shown who it is, the whole community is going to suffer consequences. And then finally, Achan admits that's the man's name. You know, it was him, and he was a nobody. He was just kind of a run-of-the-mill guy that just kind of thought he could get away with something. God was all, no, you're not going to. God is, you know, cares as much about Moses' ego getting out of control as he does about anybody. His goal is not, he's got much bigger plans for Moses than him getting to arrive in the land. To God, it's like, yeah, that's really not that big of a deal. What really is a big deal is your heart, your soul. Is your soul clean? Is your soul the best that it can be? Is your soul pure? That's what God cares about. That's why he works with such intensity with Moses in this case. It's an interesting side note, though. You would think, because he rapped on it twice and said speaking to it, it would have been a dud. You know, nothing would have happened. You ever thought about that? I mean, if you knew the story, you know, how come it worked? How come water came out? And it's just interesting. This really has nothing to do with anything that the staff tricks still work. God provides for the people in spite of the faults of their leader. Okay, as somebody who's in a position of shepherding and leadership, especially in our context as a church, that is a huge relief. Because I know, and certainly God knows even better, my frailties and flaws and faults. And one of my prayers is like, God, in spite of me, still care for everyone involved with neighborhood, you know, and bless these families, these marriages, and all the, you know, finances and all the, you know, challenges and struggles that I feel so inadequate to, you know, to support or you know, it's like, you know, so this is a very comforting truth that God will care for his people in spite of the weaknesses in leadership. So that's another cool thing we see about God. But what do we learn about Moses from this story? Because here's the cool thing about Moses. Okay, I've been around the church thing here now for a while. And I've had to deal with some issues before, whether it was people in the congregation, people on staff, people at other training, just, you know, there's drama that happens. And it never plays out well when somebody, it's just the way I think we're brought up in our culture, and it's just hard with our pride. It's a lot for people to say. This is why the J.R. Smith thing was so impressive to me. It's hard, and maybe you've seen this in your workplace, to take criticism, to take consequence. We talk a lot about accountability. But when accountability happens to us, it's like, no thanks, I'm out. You know, if you're gonna treat me like that, you know, then I'm, you know, fine, but I'm gone. And what usually happens is somebody you just don't see them again. You know, it's like it's very, very rare, you know, that somebody will go, you know what? I messed up. I would like to learn from this. It happens, and that's why it's so impressive when it does, because it's so rare when somebody humbly embraces accountability. But this is what happens is your soul is rescued, and this is what happened with Moses. Another horribly titled book, the Book of Deuteronomy. It's the fifth book. It's in the Bible, so there's Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, right? Come on, somebody titled something interesting. Numbers, Deuteronomy, what does that even mean? Deuteronomy is this amazing book. It's basically Moses making sure that he finishes the work that God signed him to. He never complains about his consequence. He never slows down. He keeps pushing hard till 120. He becomes even better at delegating, and he grooms up Joshua, his first lieutenant, to be the one that takes over after his work is done. Deuteronomy. Deutero meaning second, nomo meaning the law. You know, that was the best the Greek language can translate, Torah. It's basically a retelling. It's a review. This is like a great, this is like Moses' great halftime speech. It's like, it's what Steve Kerr is doing, you know, at every game in the finals. It's like, look what has brought us this far. I want to make sure nobody messes up. You know, everybody stays focused. Everybody does their job. We have so much writing on this. And I want to make sure every one of you enjoys the blessing that God has prepared for you. And he spends this whole long, wonderful book of retelling the story to make sure everyone in this new generation that's grown up in this 40 years in the wilderness understands where they've come from and where they've headed. He could have easily just walked away and said, you know what, somebody else, nothing's in it for me anymore. What's in it for me? Just more hard work, more blood, sweat, and tears.
He never slows down. If anything, he gets more nuanced. When you read through Deuteronomy and the words and the speeches that he gives, I mean, he's this even more mature, experienced, nuanced leader that really sees God's perspective and has God's heart for his people. And it's nothing about him. And it is such, to me, it's the biggest nugget, the biggest piece in this whole mosaic of his life on how he deals with this heartbreaking, heart-wrenching result of his misstep. But he deals with it in such a powerful way. He takes it on. He trusts God. He really trusts into that friendship that God knows what's best for me, and this will make me better. God really does have my best interests at heart. And what I think is so powerful for each of us is knowing that we're going to make mistakes. The best of the best make mistakes. And when we do, we need to just come together, be honest, be transparent, support each other. I love this passage that Paul writes about in Galatians. Dear brothers and sisters, if one of you is overcome by some sin, you who are godly should really stick it to him. No. Gently and humbly help that person back onto the right path. Because we're all in this together, and we're all going to sin. We're all going to have missteps. We're all going to have weak moments. Let's come together and help each other through that. Share each other's burdens, and in this way, obey the law of Christ. And this phrase that means, if it happens to one of you, it happens to the community. So don't be judgmental. Come together. Rally around each other, and because God, it's to help somebody. It's to help each other. And it's this very comforting thing that God has our best interests at heart through accountability, even though it can be scary and embarrassing and all that. I just loved how embarrassed J.R. Smith was through all this, and how he just admitted, I mean, to me, that was so inspiring to just go, you know, I messed up, I'm an idiot, but I'm not going to let it affect my future. I'm going to keep pressing on. I love the response from his coach. Said that Smith would keep his starting role for game two, and noted that as much as everyone wants to harp on his blunder, had he not got the rebound, Golden State could have won it right there and then instead of pushing it to overtime. But I mean, again, that was like and it's LeBron, even though we were steaming at the end of the game, everybody rallied around him and lived out that Galatians passage. It's like, you know, let's not give up on this guy. You know, everybody makes mistakes. He was honest about it eventually.
Katie's the one that said that in his post game talking about the collisions.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said it was a great group.
And so that's the thing. Here's a little gift that God does give Moses right at the end. And I think this is a fun way to wrap up Mosaic. Here, last chapter, chapter 34 of Deuteronomy, which is such a great chapter. It's one of those great last chapters. Then Moses climbed Mount Nebo from the plains of Moab to the top of Pisgah, across from Jericho. You guys are all picturing this in your maps and stuff. Okay. There the Lord showed him the whole land from Gilead to Dan, all of Naphtali. Now, none of these places have been named yet, but these are the names that eventually come that are named after the 12 tribes of Israel. It's basically the whole Canaanite valley that God had showed to Abraham. He gets Moses up on this great perch and shows him. So before Moses dies, he'll get to see everything that he worked so hard to ensure
his people get to experience. Territory of Ephraim and Manasseh, which if you remember from your old, so that's on the east side of the Jordan versus the west side. I mean, someday we'll like really scour how that all worked out when they, little too detailed there. All the land of Judah, as far as the Mediterranean. I mean, this is a big, crystal clear day where you could just see forever. Then the Lord said to him, this is the land I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob when I said, I will give it to your descendants. I have let you see it with your own eyes, though you won't cross into it. And so, but what an example. Because it's gonna happen. Something's gonna trip us up. Something's gonna be embarrassing. We're gonna have to eat some humble pie. How are we going to respond? Whether it's, whatever context. Are we going to let our pride get the best of us? Or are we gonna let God get the best of us, who sees our potential and will never give up on molding and shaping us into the image of his son as long as we will let him? And so let's let him like Moses did, because this incredible example of never giving up on God, because knowing that God will never give up on us. And Moses lived that 120 years full steam in spite of, he knew what was really in it for him. It was much more than putting his feet on some soil. It was getting to be in this friendship with the living God. And that was more than any promised land anyway. Well, let me say a little prayer as John and the team come back up. And but I hope this has been a fun series where you've gotten to know Moses in some ways that I hope we can all relate to, and realize that even this great, famous, historic leader, legendary, has a lot in common with all of us. And God can use us in powerful ways. He cares much more about our character and what we view as important accomplishments. And what really leads to success in life is letting God have his way with us, even if that means humbly embracing accountability. Heavenly Father, thank you that we have these stories. And thank you for Moses. Thank you for his example. That even though when he messed up, he was humble about it. Lord, please, when we help us to have that same spirit when we mess up, to realize we need your accountability. We need each other to stay on the right path. And so, Lord, let us have the kind of friendship with you and with each other as a church family that you and Moses had, where there's that level of trust and transparency that we can be honest, we can be humble, we can let our pride go, and we can keep pressing on and doing our best every new day. And so, Lord, thank you again for all you do in our lives. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. Me and John were talking a little bit this week leading up to today. And as we go into communion and worship now, John was talking about how what would that be like? I mean, to see God face to face, he said, it'd be so great to do this song as we kind of try to do our best to imagine, what it's going to be like You know, God may decide to reveal himself, you know, in whatever context, but we are guaranteed that we will see him someday, face to face. What will that be like? And so as we sing this song, I just, you know, let that kind of be on your heart. And then prayer team will be in the back of the room. We'd love to pray with you. Come to the communion table as you feel led.